Welcome to the Purpose Unlocked podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Jennifer Winstall.
And I'm Leslie Kinchlow.
We're with the Winstall Kinchlow team in Charlotte, North Carolina. You can reach us at jennifer.winstall@ubs.com. We are financial advisors with UBS, one of the largest wealth managers in the world.
We are so excited to have meaningful conversations with a variety of guests. We'll be exploring their passions in business, entrepreneurship, and philanthropy.
Our mission is to bring purpose to life beyond the numbers. Welcome to the Purpose Unlocked podcast. And today we're joined by Ryan White. He's the Senior Director of 529 Plans for Columbia Threadneedle. And today we're going to talk about 529s. They're not just for college.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say 529s are widely unknown, somewhat misunderstood. When you compare them to things that we talk about a lot more often, like IRAs and 401ks, you know, those go back to the mid to late 70s. 529, especially the 529 plans that we have today, they really didn't come on the scene until late 90s, really early 2000s, when most states started putting them into place. So, you know, by comparison, they're in their relative adolescence to a lot of the other things that we talk about. And one of the things that is kind of at the forefront of 529s is the trajectory of them. You know, when they were first created, they were exclusively for higher education, and most of them still today have college savings or college investment plan as part of the name of the program. But they've come a long way. They've been opened up K through 12 apprenticeship programs, most recently rollover to Roth IRAs, which is, you know, something that the industry is really excited about. It really jumpstarts that conversation. So, an underutilized vehicle, largely misunderstood, and certainly to your point, a lot more use case than simply college investment.
So do you want to talk about the tax? Let's start with tax advantages to a 529 plan. Leslie and I talk a lot about state-by-state tax deductions, but largely, what do you see the average, you know, opening a 529? What is the genesis? How do they fund it? What are the tax advantages?
Yeah.
And what's kind of the end game?
Right. So, you know, different financial institutions, consulting organizations, what have you, they do surveys, and it's not uncommon to see a very prominent survey result, the cost of education being a primary concern. You know, a lot of people rank it pretty close after saving for retirement or planning for healthcare expenses. Planning for education is certainly up there. So, you know, the genesis of opening a 529 account for most folks is that they have a young child or grandchild, and you know, a college education is something that they are at least aspiring to. You know, Pew Research did a study back in sort of the early 20 teens, and at the time, 90% of the parents that they interviewed had at least an expectation that their son or daughter would ultimately attend college one day. So certainly there is that, you know, expected use case. You know, same reason we save for retirement is a reason we should save for education. But, you know, you mentioned taxation. Tax is obviously one of our biggest, impediments to wealth accumulation over time. And 529s provide an opportunity to overcome that, primarily through the ability of tax-free compounding. So again, for the same reason why we love to talk about IRAs and you know, spread the word about IRAs and 401ks and all these other tax advantage vehicles, 529s fall into that category. So, you know, at a basal level, you have the opportunity to invest, grow those assets over time in a tax-free way, and then ultimately use them tax-free for qualified expenses, which includes a wide variety of opportunity, again, not only for college expenses, but for other education-related expenses as well. And then, you know, while on the subject of taxation, one of the things that we've really started to talk about over the last decade, especially with the advice community, is the lesser understood gifting and estate tax benefits. You know, there's a few things going on with a 529 account that really aren't available in any other type of investment vehicle, and certainly one that is sort of available as a retail product, right? When you compare it to something like a trust, which is usually a lot more or detailed and costly to establish. Contributions to a 529 account are actually considered completed gifts. So not only do you get to fund a future potential objective of education, but you're also accomplishing a gifting and estate task at the same time in the form of gifting. But what's unique about it is, as far as I know, it's one of the only opportunities, if not the only opportunity, to give away something for gift and estate tax purposes and actually keep it at the same time, because the account holder always has, you know, daily access and the opportunity to, you know, change their mind and withdraw it for any reason. So, you know, when you start putting all the different combinations together, you're really looking at a tax-advantaged investment vehicle with a wide variety of tax-free use cases that doesn't have any required minimum distributions. You can open it up today and never close it. You can open it up today and close it tomorrow. No required, like I said, no required minimum distributions, no age limit, no time limit, no income limits on contributions, relatively no contribution maximums in general. So, you know, quite powerful, and you get it all for really the cost of a, you know, traditional mutual fund or ETF.
Can we go back to the gifting and particularly grandparents? I think it would be interesting to talk about that because we've seen that in our practice where grandparents use that 5-year gifting opportunity. Can you talk about what that looks like?
And right. Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned, 529s are considered, or contributions to 529s are considered completed gifts. And of course, we all have what typically is referred to as the annual gifting exclusion. So the amount of money that you can give somebody else and not pay gift tax as the giver. But 529s are unique to your point in that they actually include a feature where you can put 5 years worth of gifts in at a single time, which for the current limits, the annual exclusion is $19,000. So $95,000 for an individual contributor. If you file a joint return, then multiply that times two. And that's for one beneficiary.
Right.
And beneficiary is sort of the loose term for the future college student, maybe, right? Because we don't have a crystal ball. And that's one of the magic things about 529 is I have the ability to position dollars to grow in this advantaged way and also accomplish potentially an estate objective at the same time. But then a year from now, especially in the case of a grandparent, maybe something happens to me and I'm now in a situation where, you know, I need in-home care, or I'm looking at, you know, large medical expense, or whatever the situation may be, I have the ability to use that resource. Whereas if I had given it away in any other general sense of gifting, that money's gone.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, we have a little bit of a joke in the 529 world where we talk about what does UGMA stand for, which is another typical type of account that people at least used to set up for education. Of course, it stands for Uniform Gift to Minors, but we joke that it stands for you give money away, right? Because you fund an account like that. And there's a lot of great benefits, but one of the things that you can't do is take it back. And so a 529 gives you that flexibility as a contributor. So to bring it back to your question about grandparents, you know, grandparents are usually in a situation where they're in, they've gone through their wealth creation, their asset accumulation phase. They typically are going to have, you know, more resources available to them than potentially their own children who have the grandchildren. And they're in a unique position to be able to set aside funds for a potential future goal and even the opportunity to, you know, leave a legacy in that capacity, but keep those funds available for whatever comes.
Mm-hmm. And they're it's portable, right?
Portable. You know, it goes with you. It's transferable. I have, you know, I was one of seven grandkids on one side. If my grandparents had, you know, had a 529 plan for me and I had gone, you know, down the non-college route, they could have simply changed it to anyone who's a member of the family, any one of their other grandchildren. So a lot of flexibility. You can change the beneficiary or again, future student as often as you need to without any tax cost or fee. And the only requirement is it has to be a member of the family. And it's a pretty broad umbrella for who can be included there.
So should you use the 529 for secondary education? Can you outline for us? It's not just tuition. It includes housing. But what if they seek an apartment? What about books? And can you just go through all the different things it covers?
Yeah. So again, from the outset, these were exclusively college savings vehicles. And it's important to note that not only were they built for that purpose, but they're the only thing that was ever built expressly for that purpose. So right out of the box, so to speak, the 529 provides a lot of opportunity for expenditure when we think about traditional college expenses. So certainly tuition and fees, as you mentioned, but housing, which includes off-campus housing up to the cost of living on campus. And, you know, most traditional, especially if you think about the bigger state universities, they don't have the capacity to house every student. Most of them encourage their upperclassmen to move off campus, and you can absolutely pay for, you know, townhouse or apartment rent qualified from a 529. You just don't want to exceed the cost of living in a dorm. You know, meal plans, computers, software, access to the internet, all of that, as long as it's primarily used by the student, is qualified. You even have the ability to pay for special needs situations. So if you have a student who is college bound, but they might have, you know, a special equipment need or any type of special need while they're attending, those are qualified from a 529 plan as well. So, you know, the general rule is when you think about college expenses, if the school can charge you for it as an expenditure that's required to go there, you can use your 529 to pay for that.
Study abroad included?
So study abroad is one of those kind of unique areas. There are close to 400 international institutions that qualify basically for direct expenditures from a 529 plan. In many cases, when you're studying abroad, you still might be, you know, making the payment to your domestic institution, your sponsoring institution. The one thing that is sort of expressly not a qualified expense currently is the cost of transportation. So, you know, if you grow up in North Carolina and you choose to go to school in Berkeley, the flight to go to and from school is not currently a qualified expense. And I say currently because there's some legislative push in DC to change that. But certainly the large portion of expenditures that you would have would be qualified.
Somebody recently asked me the question around, what do we do with unused funds? Frequently, our clients are concerned they're overfunding their 529 plans.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your advice to those who are concerned about unused funds?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say on the topic of unused funds is congratulations, right? Because most people are not going to be in the situation of having money left over after college expenses are over. But that's exactly what the rollover to Roth legislation was designed to overcome. Because when you look at the details of who is eligible, the two leading criteria are that you have to have a 529 for 15 years, and any money that you might be rolling over to a Roth has to have been in your 529 account for 5 years. And the reason they set it up that way was because they wanted to reward or encourage long-term investment in 529 accounts. And really what they're combating is the question that you're asking, which is, you know, I'm worried about overfunding. You know, I think my son is, you know, son or daughter is college bound, but sometimes I think they might wind up in the state pen as opposed to Penn State. So they're going to, you know, who knows what, I want to be careful here. And this opportunity now to take these leftover monies or monies not necessarily used for education and potentially roll them into a retirement account goes a long way towards alleviating that burden. But I always remind folks too that, you know, you made the investment in the 529. You found the money at the time to make that investment. Maybe you sacrificed something. You know, maybe you didn't. You budgeted that item. There's no time limit on 529 plans. Just because plan A didn't happen doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have an opportunity at some point in the future. I like to think that when sort of deployed in the right way, somebody max funding, you know, using that 5-year forward gifting opportunity early on, really has the opportunity not only to pay for education for that particular beneficiary, but potentially for several beneficiaries' generations in the future. So I always remind folks, there's no clock or time limit on your 529 plan. You always have the opportunity for future generations. And I always also like to remind people that none of the options are mutually exclusive in the sense that I can roll over a portion of the funds to a Roth. I can change the beneficiary on a portion of the funds in the same account. I might leave a portion of the funds still in that account for a future generation or a future use case. So it's any combination, sort of any permutation of all the different options available that are potential solutions.
Well, and the max Roth amount is 35,000, right?
Correct.
2025.
Mm-hmm.
Have we heard if that's going to go up at all in the future?
You know, there's some water cooler as to whether or not it will be indexed for inflation. Obviously, the IRA contribution limit tends to go up,
right,
you know, every year or two. It's certainly not out of the realm of possibility. There are a lot of supporters of 529s in DC. Dare I say it's one of the few remaining bipartisan things. It really gets a lot of support from both sides of the aisle. Some of the more recent legislative proposals have been just that, the potential to index that number. You've also had discussion about, similar to the rollover to Roth feature, the ability to withdraw from a 529 for first-time home purchase, which would be another very unique benefit. You know, again, you're talking about a tax-deferred vehicle that you can open up with. There's no earned income requirement. There's also no phase-out on the other end if you're a high earner. And then you have all these different opportunities to use the 529 in these creative ways, and certainly all these opportunities for tax-free distribution for education. And it really creates, you know, a pretty powerful story alongside all these other tax-advantaged accounts that we have.
When you're looking at potential scholarship opportunities, need-based scholarships, can they look at the 529 balance as part of that application? Do they look at that as part of the application process?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the FAFSA process, which is the needs-based process that, you know, most folks are going to go through, it does ask you about assets and income, and the asset question does include 529s that are either owned by the student in question or the parents of that student.
Okay.
Now, even though it's included, it's important to know that it's only included up to the same level as any other type of bank savings or checking account or, say, taxable brokerage account that you might have. So in other words, yes, it's included, but not any more so than anything else would be.
Okay.
The other thing about financial aid in particular that most people, I would say, are just not necessarily conscious of is a lot of folks are more concerned about the money that they may have in different types of, accounts than the primary driver, which is actually their income. So if you're a high earner, you're going to have a lot harder time getting needs-based financial aid than if you have potentially some higher balance 529s or higher balance investment accounts, because up to 44% of your income is considered eligible for college use when you're applying for financial aid, but only roughly 5.5% of your assets.
Oh, interesting.
Going back to your question about grandparents, just in the last couple of years, some legislation passed. It was called the FAFSA Simplification Act. And one of the headline things that it did was it changed what we used to refer to as the expected family contribution. So that was the result of the math problem that it does. It changed that to what's known now as the student aid index. But what it also did was it removed a question from the FAFSA form that was specific to grandparent-owned 529s and distributions that were taken from them. Prior to this legislation, if you took money out of a 529 account as a grandparent, then the student had to consider that as unearned income when they would file the FAFSA in subsequent years. And so they used to refer to this as the financial aid trap. That has been eliminated. So the FAFSA doesn't ask that question anymore. In essence, what it's done is it's made an account owned by a grandparent completely invisible to the process. So, you know, just another reason why grandparents are really in a great position to benefit from the 529 account. And, you know, I think it's important to say that we use the term beneficiary in talking about 529s just because that's how the tax code identifies the future potential student. Under normal circumstances, we think about beneficiaries, the person that actually benefits from something. The beneficiary of a 529 plan really can't benefit from a 529. They can only hope they don't ruin their relationship with the owner long enough for the owner to want to use it to pay for their education. All of the benefits of a 529 are benefits to whoever owns and funds the account. And that's really one of the things that we want to kind of reframe folks' perception of 529, because, you know, most people hear 529 and they think, you know, kids account. Their mind runs to kids. And the reality is the kid, I have a 529 account for my children. They're not benefiting from it. I'm benefiting from it. So I think as, you know, potential investors and participants in 529s, it's really understanding the fact that, you know, I'm the one in charge. I'm the one in control. I choose how the money's invested. I have access to all these different asset classes and investment opportunities. I can unwind it tomorrow if I find a better opportunity. I can let it grow for future generations. I have all these different opportunities. And it's me that's benefiting, not necessarily, you know, all these other people.
Mm-hmm. Like cooking school in Italy.
Right.
Are you sharing that with me?
Yeah, that's a great one. It's
one that stays with me.
And you asked that question earlier about leftover funds. I mean, that's another one, right? There's all these opportunities, correspondence courses. Maybe you want to learn how to play the guitar, and you enroll in a music class at your local community college. I mean, there's so many different opportunities to be able to use the 529, you know, to your benefit.
So how would one find the qualified institutions?
Yeah, so I kind of say this jokingly. The department, the traditional resource has been the U.S. Department of Education's website. They have maintained a database of all of the institutions that qualify for Title IV student loan programs and therefore 529 distributions. It is most of the colleges and universities that you are going to come across or can think of. Every once in a while, there might be one that doesn't meet that list. Typically, that's a very unique specialty, you know, organization or school. But it's a very exhaustive list domestically. And then I said, you know, close to 400 international institutions. And then for K-12, you know, it's typically whatever the state identifies as a K-12 institution. And K-12 is something that became available in 2017. That was the first time 529s were expanded for anything other than traditional college use. It allows for tuition expense up to $10,000 a year on a per student basis. So there again, you know, we have this opportunity where I can open an account, I can invest for the short term alongside investing for the long term. All the money in the account is, you know, certainly fungible. I can, you know, decide to use it for what I want to, when I want to, how much I want to. You know, you could even make an argument today that perhaps it makes sense to pay out of pocket a little bit for some of those college expenses to be able to keep enough money in there to take full advantage of that rollover to Roth feature.
Right.
Because you think about someone that graduates and you're able to fully fund their Roth IRA up to $35,000 in the first few years of their working life. You could get pretty moderate returns
and
by the
years.
Time their yeah. retirement age, even if they never contributed another dime, that's not insignificant.
Yeah. Well, I think this has been an amazing conversation. So thank you for joining us. Leslie,
absolutely.
Any questions? Okay. Ryan, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Stay tuned for the next episode of Purpose Unlocked.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.